This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to the Morning Run with Xiao Ning and Chuang. It is now 7:47 in the morning. And, you know, the Friday, the 24th of July, and we're going to be talking about COVID-19. Because we have seen 9 new cases as of yesterday, bringing the total number to 143 in terms of active cases. So at the press conference yesterday, our Health Director General, Dr. Noor Hisham, said that the R-naught, or the rate of reproduction for COVID-19, has risen from 0.3 during the MCO in June to 1.36.
Yeah, so that's a quadrupling. Okay, that's 4 times as fast, which means basically more people will get infected if we don't take care, which is why now, if you don't wear a mask in public, you're going to be fined $1,000.
As of August the
1st. As of August, and it's getting a bit more serious again. But we've been quite lucky in that since the MCO began on 18th of June, the daily case count has remained quite low, relatively speaking.
Yeah, but nonetheless, we shouldn't keep our eye off the ball, right? I mean, this number of increases, cases from single digits to mid-teens should give us some room for pause, because it doesn't take a lot for cases to spiral out of control like what we saw in Hong Kong and Melbourne. So, of course, the question is, are we in danger of becoming too complacent with COVID-19? So to discuss this, we have with us Dr. Siti Khairiyah Muhammad Hanifiah, who is a senior lecturer with the University Science Malaysia. Now, she co-authored a study modelling the potential scenarios post-MCO together with the Khazana Research Institute, which was issued in April. Thanks for joining us, Kai. Your study looked at possible trajectories of COVID-19 post-MCO based on data from the first quarter of the year. Have the scenarios you envisage come to pass? Hello, Doctor? Oh, okay. Just one moment. We seem to have a bit of a technical issue. But, you know, yeah.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, finally, we have you online.
Hi. Sorry.
No worries. Thanks for joining us.
I thanked you earlier, but apparently I was muted. I tend to mute myself a lot.
Apologies about that.
Same. So thanks again for having me on the show to speak on behalf of my colleagues from Khazana Research Institute and University Science Malaysia. And we originally did this study knowing that the MCO was never going to be a long-term solution. And we thought that it was important to know what we're in for in the long run. That's why we call the study Dancing with COVID-19. And from the model, what we found was that there was a margin where the MCO could be relaxed, socioeconomic activities restarted, and life resumed, which is basically what we're going through right now, without running into another wave. But the critical part is that there is a threshold where public health precautions needed to be maintained, or we spiral into another projection where we go back into a COVID-19 wave. So it does seem that based on the data that we have right now, Malaysia's trajectory is closer to our optimistic scenario, where we are able to relax the restrictions, but we are maintaining sufficient public health precautions to avoid that second wave so far.
Yeah, Doc, is there a possibility of surmising the level of compliance from the relatively low case trends since RMCO began?
Yeah, so the model tells us there's a margin for relaxation of the strict MCO level type of interventions, but it doesn't actually tell us what specific interventions are the most important. And we would assume it is a sum of different types of precautions. What the model does tell us is that how fast we isolate infected people really impacts the trajectory of the disease and the epidemic. So the increased testing capacity and contact tracing, I think right now we're up to 32,000 tests a day, play a real critical role. And we really have to thank our hospitals and public health lab systems for that. But of course, there's the general precautions that individually we're expected to also take, like keeping our hand hygiene, wearing masks when we're in public, especially now that there's increasing evidence that we get transmission from aerosols and droplets. So wearing the masks can avoid that, as well as avoiding crowded, confined areas. But of course, anecdotally, we'll all have a different opinion of what the level of compliance has been. Whatever the real compliance is, it seems that for now, we're collectively still able to maintain that low rate of transmission. But the more important thing is that as we move forward, we need to maintain whatever we've been doing before. Because the more we individually relax, then obviously the higher the risk of the COVID-19 resurging.
So Kai, clearly SOPs are very important here, right? But do you think that the SOP standards have been communicated clearly enough to the public? What aspects do you think are lacking, if any?
The point of having SOPs and in fact communicating them clearly is so that we reduce the need to interpret what is appropriate or safe behavior as we reopen the country. But we can't expect the SOPs to cover all situations, especially as we keep reopening. And ultimately, the idea is to get people to understand the risks. So the risks of getting the disease, the risk of spreading it to other people in different situations, and how to manage those risks. But the challenging part is COVID-19 is a new disease. A lot of the information is emerging and it gets updated very rapidly. And so beyond the SOPs, people need to also be able to respond to that in a positive way so that we can benefit from all the research that's being done. So I would also argue that when it comes to, you know, SOPs or what we should do or shouldn't do, we need to waste less time about what was said before and focus more on what is the best action now based on the most recent and convincing evidence. And that's why I think the media plays such a huge role when we have these rapidly developing situations like the COVID-19 pandemic, because you have the power to refocus public attention to what should actually be prioritized rather than being distracted with some of the discussions, I think. And I guess additionally, we have to recognize the fact that changing and regulating behavior is by nature difficult. That's why in public health, vaccines have been so useful to keep diseases at bay. You don't need that long-term compliance. So in talking about compliance, as much as the SOPs are there, moving forward, we need to try and get them to be more feasible, more integrated into regular processes as possible, while still addressing the need to reduce risks and also be updated on what is the latest information and how to mitigate the risk. So education and focusing more on developing healthy social norms, I would say, is the more key long-term ingredient in managing this disease. And rather than talking about enforcing SOPs.
Nonetheless, though, there's also this whole issue of compliance fatigue. How should policymakers address this issue if it does exist?
Compliance fatigue is real, I think with long-term compliance, it falls back to the idea that the more buy-in, the more educated and the more empowered people are to actually protect themselves and their community, then the less resistance you're going to get over time. So that means we need to really keep on driving the message and educating, and also to leave no one behind or introduce new barriers, either to accessing care or to adopting prevention. So elements of discrimination and stigmatization, that really has no place when we talk about public health interventions and getting all of society to be involved and to continue to be involved. So as you mentioned earlier, what we've seen in other places that have gone back into lockdown, like Melbourne, once the numbers start going up, it doesn't take long for it to climb up rapidly. So we need to remember again that early action is critical. So even though things like the MCO were very taxing on our lives and our economy, we know that if we did it, because we did it early and we did it properly, we were able to get out of it relatively fast. So the sooner we make the sacrifices to put the brakes on any future spread of this disease, the sooner we get back to resume life.
Thank you for your time, Kai. That was Dr. Khairia Mohamad Hanafia, Senior Lecturer at the University of Science Malaysia, telling us that, you know, you better follow the rules. Otherwise, you know, we might have to have another series of lockdowns. I mean, this is a disease. It's a virus that we know very little of. And, you know, it can come back again if we don't follow the SOPs. But the SOPs itself need to be feasible. They need to be integrated and communicated clearly to the public so that there's no confusion. And that's part of the problem, right? Because we have been running a poll as to why people don't want to comply with COVID-19 SOPs. And we have had, as Chuang will say, hundreds of participants. So 35% say, no, it's not challenging for them. They comply. Now, 22% actually admit they forget. 22% also say it's inconvenient. And this is the part. 21% say, things are okay, what? So, i.e., yeah. All right, you know, why should we be worried? Which is the dangerous part of this, actually.
Well, as the prof was saying, we're doing about 32,000 cases, tests a day, which is actually not bad. I think we've continued to pursue a targeted policy of testing, unlike the more mass testing in other Western countries. But you look, I mean, Hong Kong is under second wave. South Korea is under second wave. So there's a lot to be cautious about.
Yeah, I mean, this is a social contract you have with other Malaysians. So do your little bit, do your part, wear your mask, keep a physical distance and wash your hands. But we're about to head into the 8 a.m. news bulletin. And after that, the breakfast grill, where I'm going to speak to Patrick Chang, CIO for Asian Equities at Principal Asset Management, and Alex Chia, Head of Regional Equity Research at RHB Investment Bank, to find out where the Malaysian market is going and where you can make some money. Stay tuned for that. That's happening in a few minutes. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.